Hey, Bryce, it's Gabby from season 37, aka Gabrielle Union. Miss you and hope you're doing well. It's a Purple Pants podcast.
It's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants podcast. You better get your headphones and listen up quick. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants podcast. You better listen in public, might make your stomach hurt. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants podcast. You trying to unwind, you better get that box wine. It's the Purple Pants podcast. You trying to get your snack, you better hurry right back though. It's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants.
What's the tea, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Purple Pants Podcast. I am your illustrious host, Bryce Isaiah, and welcome. Hey, another week, some more tea. What's tea, everybody? What's going on? Listen, we in March. February is over. We in March. Make sure you turn your zaddy calendars and your hot girl summer calendars, okay? We're going to get cold matter. Whew, okay, we got Andrea, and we got Sierra Easton for the ladies. But yes, how's everyone doing? What's going on? I hope you guys had a productive weekend. You know me, I actually wasn't as busy as a bee this weekend. I did a whole bunch of nothing. And listen, baby boy is fine with that. I had some facial masks that I got for Christmas. So I was trying out different facial masks. I was laid up in the bed. I did a little pre-spring cleaning. So, you know, I just tried to get some clothes out of my closet. I, you know, donated it to the Goodwill. And that was a story in the story because it's a Goodwill by my house. And so, you know, I tried to drop it off and I pulled in and they're like, do you have an appointment? Bitch, I didn't know I needed an appointment to drop clothes off. Shirley, Miss Shirley. So Miss Shirley was giving me a hard time, but in the end, I was able to drop my I've never heard that in my life. Do I have an appointment to drop Miss Shirley to drop some clothes off? Where? Miss Shirley was trying me for a little bit. Hold on, let me wet the whistle. But I didn't let her stop me from being in the giving spirit. So, you know, onward and upward. So I've got an amazing episode for you guys this week. So let's just run down what's popping on this week's episode of the Purple Pants Podcast. And if you are listening to this podcast for the first time, welcome. Show your baby boy some love. You can like us on Apple Podcasts. You can subscribe. You can rate. You can write a review. You can show some love. If you see us on the Twitters, if you see us on the Instagram, if you see us on the Facebook, ain't gonna hurt you to give us a like, give us a share, give us a retweet, tag a friend, tell a friend what's pop. But you know, we have our church announcements this week, okay? On the menu, we've got our Survivor News with Jack Atkins. I am covering McMillions again. We've got 60 Days In. We've got Love After Laka. I've got my good girlfriend, Desi Williams. She's giving us a little breakdown on Love is Blind, since that is taking the internet and the world by storm. It's the number one show in America. Yes. So my girl, Desi Williams from Healers, Hustlers, and you know, whatever the last one is, she got our back. And then we've got the Purple Pants Picks, we've got Advice with Bryce, and we got the Freak of the Week. So without further ado, let's get into these church announcements. And before we get into the church announcements, you know, baby boy's wetting his whistle a little bit. So I told you for my birthday, you know, I was gifted a lot of Tito's. So I'm drinking a little Tito's and a little Diet Pepsi. I'm hoping the calories will even up themselves. But you know, a lot of things are coming up for me this spring, so I've been trying to get my healthy lifestyle together, but this week, you know, I am on it, okay? I need to be looking like a snack. But anyway, back to the church announcements. So first on the church announcements, here at the Purple Pants Podcast, I just want to give a huge congratulations to our good friend of the show, Angelina Keeley, on February 28th at 3:35 a.m. She gave birth to a beautiful and healthy 8-pound, 5 ounces, 21.5 inches long baby, Sophie Michelle Keeley. So, yes! Congratulations. Oh, my God. I already know Angelina is going to be an amazing mother, but I'm just so happy and excited for her and her husband. So here from the Purple Pants Podcast, we just want to wish you a congratulations. Next on the church announcements, you know, Winners at War. You know, baby boy, Wendeezy. You know, he be having his watch parties. We are doing another watch party this Wednesday. So if you don't have anything to do, you're in the Philly, Jersey, Delaware area, come on out. Click the link in my bio, his bio. Get your tickets for Wendell's watch party. It will be something fun. Now, wait a minute. Now, I got to just scroll on down because listen. I told y'all I be on the Twitters, and you know I don't play about my friend Wendeezy, okay? There's a couple other people I don't play about, but I don't play about Mr. Wendeezy, okay? And so I was minding my business, you know, after last Wednesday, you know, just minding my business on the Twitters, you know, just scrolling through, and I happened to come across, oh, if I had to clutch my pearls, from Malcolm Friedberg talking about random ish that bugs me. Why does Wendell have a toothpick in challenges, Survivor? First of all, hold me, woo, 10-9-8, 10-9-8, 7. First of all, 10-9-8, 10-9-8, 5-4-3, 5-4-3. First of all, Malcolm, don't in your ever life come from my friend Wendell, okay? Why he got a toothpick in challenges? Because maybe it helps him concentrate. Maybe it's because he's a winner. Ooh. You know, I don't know, maybe after three times after you played, I don't know, maybe you don't know what that's about, Malcolm. Don't come from my friend Malcolm, okay? Whew, Charles, I was hot when I seen that, okay? I don't even want to tell y'all what Joe Minda had to say, but you know I don't play about my brother, okay? If he want to wear a toothpick, you know, maybe he got his breath be stinking, Malcolm. He be having, you know, dried up rice in there. He got to get it out. Don't worry about him, okay? Because he won Ghost Island. Whew. Sorry, y'all, they got me hot. Got me hot. I don't take kindly to, you know, they coming for my brother. All right, next on the church announcements, I just wanted to let you guys know that, you know, Hearts of Reality is an organization that's very close to my heart. They generally do an event in August, which I will be participating, but this year they're going to be doing an event in May 16th in Los Angeles, and, you know, they've asked me to be a part of it, and so obviously, you know, I had to oblige, you know, baby boy loves the kids, anything to help promote. So I just want to let the Purple Pants posse aware that I'll be raising money for Hearts of Reality. So when this podcast comes out, I'm going to put it to my Facebook. I'll tweet the link. I put it on Instagram. So if any of you guys want to be a blessing to these amazing children that, you know, that need a little, I always say extra love, because I just feel like no matter what their situation is, what they have, it doesn't matter. Everybody needs a little extra love. So if you want to be amazing, amazing blessing to them, please help your boy reach my fundraising goals. It'll be amazing. Thank you. Now, last on the church announcements. Okay. Y'all know I'll be like, you know, let me wet the whistle. So I just wanted to say to all my Purple Pants posses, you know, sometimes I feel things in my spirit and I just like, you know, I like to utilize this platform to get things out. And I just wanted to remind everybody that listening, no matter how old, how young, that, you know, there will always be a no. Okay, when we are looking for something, there's always going to be a no, okay? So that's a part of our struggle, and that's a part of, you know, where we are going. And so what I always say, when one door closes, Purple Pants Posse, baby, it's always a side entrance. It's always a window that we might have to throw a rock in, break the window, and climb on in, because no does not mean no, okay? It is just a speed bump that we have to go through. And so I just wanted to reach out and just let my Purple Pants Posse knows that it's okay. It's a part of our growing pains. And in order for us to truly appreciate when we get to where we're supposed to be, we've got to have some highs and we've got to have some lows and we've got to have some disappointments to humble us and to start the fire. So I just wanted to let anybody that's listening, don't take no for an answer and don't let no discourage you. Don't let it stop you, okay? Because when one door closes, Purple Pants Posse, I will get on the ground, you will jump on my back, and we will lift each other up because we're going to get to where we have to go. So I just wanted to, that message to anybody that I just feel like it might apply to, but it was in my spirit, and I just wanted to let y'all know, they do not take no for an answer. Whatever you got to do, whatever we need to change around, whatever, however harder we got to got, however harder we have to go, and we have to light a fire under our behind, okay, we're going to get to where we got to go, okay? today. So that's the tea. So what's the tea? That's the tea. When one door closes, we in there. We going to get in there somewhere else. And so I just hope that that can inspire somebody, because I know in my life, I hear a lot of no's and I hear a lot of things that I could just be like, you know what? Forget it all. But I continue to move forward. I put my left foot in front of my right foot. I count from 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I refocus in where I can put that energy. All right. So that is this week's church announcements. Let's get on to the menu. And we are back with this week's Survivor Report with our baby boy, Jack Atkins. What's poppin'?
What's up, Bryce? How you doing?
I am blessed by the best. How about yourself?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. I went to a fashion show on Friday, Bryce. It was poppin', so we're turned up. Yeah. But it was a good weekend. It feels like this episode was forever ago, I'm excited to talk about it.
We got to pause that real quick. Fashion show, do tell. What type of fashion show was it?
So my school has like a pretty, like somewhat esteemed fashion magazine called Moda, like Moda Chicago. And so they put, like they, every year they do like a fashion show and everyone, like pretty much everyone at the school just goes and like gets lit. It was pretty sick.
How were the fashions?
Oh, they were interesting. Like, I'm not too keen on fashion. You know me. I just let you pick the shits out, get the black jeans on, get the hoodie on, get it popping. So, but there was some creative stuff. But I was, you know, I was in the back giving some snaps. I was like, ooh, I like that. Acting like I knew what I knew. That sounded weird. Acting like I knew what I was talking about.
Okay, interesting. Baby boy at a fashion show. Okay, that caught me off guard. All right, on to Survivor news. What's popping?
So, I mean, I think this episode kind of stuck with the trend of what we saw the past few episodes, where things seem to be a bit slower. Like, it's starting off a little slow. People are going for, like, you know, the easier votes. Obviously, this New School Alliance had the pick of Rob, Parvati, and Ethan. I think going for Ethan, he's probably the least threatening of those three, but it makes sense because you want to start off slow. But we definitely saw Adam going at it a lot this episode. And you know, things are starting to shake up a little bit. Jeremy and Michelle with some great plays, making an interesting move, obviously going for Ethan. I think we got some dynamic duos forming as well. You know, we got Jeremy and Michelle, we got Sandra and the sit out bench. it's like we said in the past, it's like the oven's heating up and we're just witnessing it. What did you think of everything?
I thought it was interesting. I was very confused by Adam and his idea to like tell Ethan, tell Rob, and like, you know, by no means have I won Survivor, but I just thought that those moves were pretty, like, I don't know, like I just felt like he was trying to play a get out of out of jail, but like trying to like play a game without getting your hands dirty. And it's like, you can miss me with all of that, baby boy. Like, if you want to get Parvati out, stay with your alliance and get her out. Why? Okay, I can understand you maybe wanting to tell Ethan, but why are you telling Boston Rob? Like, you know, understand that.
I mean, I think it was interesting, and it's like, in an ideal world, that's a great move, but I definitely think he just misread the situation, right? Like, he goes to Parvati's closest ally and tells her about this whole plan. Like, I understand what he's doing, and that he wants to stay in the good with everyone,
like,
and try to...
That ain't how Survivor works. To me, that's a very privileged game that you think that you can play that, okay, I'm going to vote you guys out, and I'm going to tell you about it, and because I'm beloved Adam, you guys are like, come on, Adam, I want you to play a different game. Like, I don't want to see the same game. Like, I don't know. It's just a very privileged move, in my opinion, that like you have a core alliance,
yeah,
and then you try to betray them by like I don't know.
He has his core alliance, and he was basically trying to set himself up better than anyone else. Which,
right?
I mean, it's smart in general.
It's not
if you pull it off, it's smart. But he just didn't pull it off.
But you're playing with Boston Rob. You think you're playing with Boston Rob?
Well, that's why it's stupid. I get where he's coming from, and also he has like the whole spiel that he's like. I did think it was smart when he's like sometimes just being honest. That's gonna like
no right. Get, I thought, okay,
but not
I'm
right
a,
now. Not
I'm
right
all
now.
Right. You telling Ethan? Okay, kind of weird. But you going on a Boston Rob? Like,
yeah, that's not
what
smart.
Are you like? Yeah, no, I don't. And then,
because I think his thinking is, I mean, obviously he wants to stay in good with like Boston Rob and Ethan. But to me, I get that. But also, if you don't tell anyone, then you're still one of your alliance of five, and Rob's not going to have anything in particular against you if you betray him.
Right.
So like it's you, just like now you're just putting an extra target on your back.
You're bequeathing information for no reason. Like, bequeath it unto yourself and bequeath.
Yeah. No.
It was great to see Sandra. You know, she, last week we just were talking about a one-trick pony. And mm-hmm. here baby girl is out here saying, well, I'm not going to play the same game. I'm out here fishing, getting it together. I thought it was great to see, you know. But it was more hilarious to see Tony describe him catching that shark. And the shark almost biting him. It's just like, you know, just makes me fall more and more in love with my cocky young brother, Tony. But makes me nervous because it's just like, oh, he is such a great character for TV that I'm like, oh my God, it's only a matter of time before they're going to like turn the target on him. So I was nervous about him. I was great to see Cops R Us back in play. You know, Sarah had to go into stealth mode real quick.
Of course.
Crawl. I don't be understanding them because when I was out there once upon a time, the slightest noise, I would turn around because I did not want to get eaten by like a wild coyote. So the fact that like she's over there like, and
she's louder than Adam out here.
Right. Like, I don't get it. But I was happy that she was able to get the advantage. And then, you know, over there on, what's it called?
Edge of Extinction.
Edge of Extinction. You got Natalie Anderson over there running-ish.
She rich as fuck. She got all the fire tokens. I mean, Bryce, let me pitch this to you. Is there really a situation where you don't take the advantage for one fire token? Like, is there an advantage shitty enough that you wouldn't give one fire token?
I mean, possibly. Depends where you're at, like, in the game. So, like, say it's a steal a vote. I don't want to steal a vote right now. Like, you know, it depends on maybe I will save this fire token because I'm sure what I'm thinking, if Survivor is like anything, is that after the merge, you know, like, I feel like fire tokens will be more at use. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that might be true. I guess we'll have to see what comes. My bad.
Right. And so, yeah, I'm just saying, I might not want to steal a vote. I might not want an extra, depending on where I am at in the game. I don't know.
That's true. I guess, I mean, obviously you have to take it situation by situation. You can't just be like, if I'm out there, I'm not obviously going to be like, yes, yes, yes. Like, I'm automatically buying anything. But to me also, like, there's the, the implicit value of, where if someone bequeaths you something for one fire token, even if you don't really want it, the problem to me is that if you don't take it, then they're just not going to bequeath you any more things because they know you're not going to buy it and they get no fire tokens.
Well, after they bequeath you something, they, in their mind, they don't think that you have anything else anyway, so they're not going to bequeath you anything.
No, but so say I'm out of the game and you're still okay. And I offer you an advantage for one fire token, but then you don't take it, then I'm like, okay, Bryce isn't going to give me his fire tokens. I'm going to have to give this to someone else. So if I then get like an idol that I could bequeath to you for one fire token, I'm going to give it to someone who I think is going to take it.
I mean, I guess, but in the same token of what I'm saying is that you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. Because say I try to sell you, I'm on the island and I give you it, and then I get something else even amazing, I'm going to be like, well, shit, I can't give it to Jack because I already sold something to him. Because
you think I might be out of fire tokens.
Right. So you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Although, here's the thing. I mean, that's actually a great point that I didn't really think about. But you do know, say I left the game, give you my fire token, then I know you have at least two fire tokens.
Well, true. But I mean, obviously, Natalie.
But, I mean, yeah, it definitely adds a layer of duplicity to the game that wasn't there before, according to Yule.
Right. Now, I was about to say, like, we about to have to ask Yule for all that. Because,
he's going to lay out the math.
But that's why for me, it's like, no, thank you. Don't put nothing in my bag. I'm going to just play the old handed dandy way.
Really?
I mean, unless my back is against the wall. And obviously, I feel like if I'm playing, my back's going to be against the wall. But yeah, like I'm trying to hold on to the merge. See what's popping at the merge, in my opinion.
It's a weird situation. Because to me, I love getting everything and I'd probably buy everything.
Well, right. And then sometimes it complicates it because, like, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes,
and then there's also like the super meta way of thinking about it, which is like if I'm out there and someone offers me like any advantage opportunity, or like say on Island of the Idols, even when you had like the chance to do a challenge, you like the meta view on it for me is that you kind of just have to do it, otherwise production's gonna be upset with you, and then like that could fuck you over in the, like later on.
I mean, very much so true. But, you know, we ain't in the meta version. We just in the regular or like the super fan version.
No, that's true.
I just feel like, right. So it's just a definite layer that is added. However, I think once the merge, I'm more excited for the merge because let's see these tokens are played with the merge. And let's see when everyone really knows about these fire tokens because it just seems like people aren't really aware of it. I was sad to see Ethan go. I was sad that they did not. I still don't understand like their issue for not, like, y'all have the numbers with or without Adam. So if Poverty was the target, why did y'all not still take out Poverty? Like, that's just the understanding that I, and like, if Boston Rob is such a big target, take him out now. Like, I don't
know. So here's my interpretation of it. I was also a little bit surprised that they did do Ethan. My thinking is, at least what I've kind of heard, is that Jeremy was interested in working with Rob, and Parvati was interested in working, or I'm sorry, Michelle was interested in working with Parvati. And so Jeremy and Michelle is kind of like the lead decision makers. Each wanted to keep one of them, so then the last option was just to go for Ethan.
I got it, but why not Adam?
I don't know. Here's the thing I was also thinking about with Adam is he, like we've seen in Millennials vs. Gen X too, he uses this strategy often where he's just like, if I'm honest in certain situations, it could help me in the long run. So I think with him, like, yeah, he was pretty snaky to do what he did, especially since he got caught. It definitely put him in a tough spot. But I think with Adam, because it's like known that he's often honest, maybe people are like less worried because they think he'll be just giving out information like that often. You know what I mean?
I don't know. That ain't the rules of my hood. So I don't get it.
But also, I mean, they all know Adam fucked up and they're like mad at him about it. But you know, he's like still pretty much with you. So it doesn't make sense to turn him and then only be up 4-3, and then Rob could easily like flip someone.
I mean, true. But, you know, Adam has been receiving a lot of backlash on the internet. You know, he deactivated his, you know, social media.
Did he?
His dad is getting married, and he just felt like it was a lot going on. So, you know, although I am very passionate about the moves that Adam made, this is only just in the survivor head, obviously. You know, I still love my baby boy, and, you know, I just want him to do better. But, I mean, nevertheless, it's still another exciting, you know, episode. I had to watch it 2 times because, you know, I have to like focus in so I can make sure I can see what I want to see. But you know,
can we go into this Adam thing a little bit more? I just have something I want to like run by you.
Okay, well,
You said why not Adam, and to me, until kind of now, I thought like you don't do Adam, but I guess let's discuss this. If you're a player, you're probably expecting a swap at 16. There's a good chance. And I think for me, and I'm sure a lot of these winners early on, it's good to like go like have a solid majority. That way, if you swap, you're all on the same page. Do you think it could have been smart to go Adam, and then you have like a pretty strong 7 going into a swap rather than isolating Rob and Parvati a little bit?
Right. That's, I mean, my thing was when Michelle and Jeremy was talking on the Rock, I'm like, listen, he can go. Because y'all still would have the numbers on y'all, this middle ground alliance, once you link up with Yule and Sophie and Wendt. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I still feel like y'all would fare well and just kind of sort of cut the baggage of Adam. And then that way, if you wanted to barter a relationship with Poverty and with Boston Rob, like, Jeremy could just go to him and be like, yeah, he was sneaking around. I'd rather work with, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And Michelle could do the same to Poverty. Like, and it could put them at an even better advantage. And then, I mean, you know, not for nothing, child, they could target Ben, like, if it wasn't a swap, or they could then get out Ethan. Like, they still were in the numbers.
That's actually that's a good point. It there's obviously so many layers going on, like, that we don't know. But, I mean, I don't think it's bad, because if I'm playing, I'm thinking, oh, there's probably going to be a swap at 16. If we take out Adam, our whole tribe's, like, pretty happy, and then we just swap together and we're all right. But...
And if we just stop letting Boston Rob put together the puzzles, we might not even have to vote nobody out.
True that, yeah. Although, in that challenge, I think they were pretty far behind, so they almost made a comeback, didn't they?
I mean, but did they win?
No.
Okay.
I don't think...
It was Boston Rob doing the puzzle.
Yeah, it's a puzzling decision. And then also, last thing I just want to kind of run by or run through with you, back to the fire tokens. I mean, this episode, this Survivor news has been a lot of fire token discussion, but I think it's good to like get that out of the way early since that's kind of like one of the themes of the season. So price wise, everything so far has been one fire token. Do you think like as the game progresses, the prices are going to scale? Like, how do you think that should work?
Because I for sure think that they will go up, because I don't understand, like, why an immunity idol...
That's what I'm saying. Like, an idol right now is one token, or, like, a three-round idol is a token. It's, like, So, right now, I mean, obviously, the game started with 20 tokens, because everyone has one, and then there's tokens coming into play, like, every episode, so presumably after, like, 10 episodes, there's going to be 30 total tokens. And then if there's, like, seven players left, and they're dividing 30 tokens between them... Right. Like, you can't have everything just be one token. But then, like, what do you... If an idol right now is one token, then I don't really know, like, how they're going to change that.
But see, the way Survivor does it, they'll do, like, one token for an idol, and then they'll have, like, chili cheese fries, four tokens. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They'll do something so, like, and somebody will buy it. So,
yeah.
So I feel like
they just want the idols in play, I guess. Like, maybe they don't really care if it's, like, that fair. They just want people to buy idols.
Right.
But that's the thing. To me, it just never really seems like it's a... especially after the merge, right? Like you said, maybe early on you wouldn't buy something, but, like, after the merge, if you have, like, 10 tokens, it's like, you can buy this idol for one token. It's not... you don't even give that a thought. You're just like, yeah, give me that shit.
Which is why I feel like the more people that are going to go to Exile Island, the more tokens will be in play. And
exactly.
The steeper the price. So, I mean, it's definitely interesting to see. Something else came to my mind, but I forgot now because you just got me so excited with them chili cheese fries. But
I'm interested to see what happens going forward. I'm loving the character scenes that we're getting this season, like with the Red Tribe, with like Tony and the Ladder, the Shark. Basically anything Tony does, but I wish we got to see a little more of the Red Tribe strategy. I'm sure Wendell has kind of like told you about some of that stuff, but I wish I almost wanted like Red to go to Tribal so we could get a little more of that. Obviously I don't want the homies to go, so
I'm sure like the time will come, but and we'll have to sit and watch then. But no, it's just interesting to watch, you know, Poverty and I don't know, to see as much of them as we do get to see.
Yeah.
I think it's so interesting. And just the light that they are. It's just different. So interesting to see people that have not had to sweat a whole season. Like the first three episodes, you sweat.
Like with Kim.
Boots.
Like Kim was sweating.
Right. Or Adam. Or just like, you know, seeing somebody like the vote not go their way. It's mm-hmm. just always so interesting to me because it's like, oh, well, this is what it looks like.
Yeah. But I'm excited to see what happens going forward.
Yes. Nevertheless. And always thank you so much for our Survivor news. Everybody, this is Jack Atkins. We'll see baby boy next week. Maybe he'll have some fashions for us, or maybe he'll just have some fire tokens.
Thank you, Bryce. Have a good one.
Keeping it moving. You want to know what's the tea on McMillions? I got it for you. All right. So I felt like I did a lot better job basically describing McMillions. And so this week's episode was another great one. And so, again, what I will say about McMillions is it's definitely like a crime mystery that leaves me tantalized because I played the McDonald's game back in the day. And so I think that it's something that's so interesting to learn that it was sort of fixed for almost 15 years. And we have the person that we know is Uncle Jerry, who is Jerome Jacobson's, who is basically the main mastermind behind it all. We know that he was working with Jerry Colombo, rather big guy, you know, in the Colombo family, crime family. He was married to his wife, Robin. He's got a brother named Frank Colombo. He's also got a son named Frankie. So last week's episode really kind of like took us on the roller coaster of what a winner who won $1 million was like. Okay. We got to see it from our good, good sister who really didn't win a lot of money. And so we got to see the inner workings of how Jerry Colombo was, you know, living his life. It seemed that he was taking a lot of the money. He seemed to be living a more extravagant lifestyle. And so at the end of last week's episode, it really talks about how his wife, Robin, basically, basically, she was done. And her and Jerry had gotten into a fight, but they made up. And so they were driving somewhere and basically they got into a car accident, a real bad car accident where they had to use the jaws of life to get Robin out. Thank God they son Frankie was okay. And Jerry Colombo was fine for the most part. He climbed out of the car. They took him to the hospital. He called his brother Frank and was like, you know, I'm okay. We at the hospital. But being as though that Frank was such a large guy, he had internal bleeding that they did not discover until late. Now, what I like about each episode, it seems like they show you these characters, you know, in other episodes. And then all of a sudden, in these episodes, child, they be tearing them apart. Okay? So they had a roast session on Jerry Colombo's wife, Rob, in this episode. So, I was about to say basically, but I'm not, so I'm going to take that basically back. So, while Jerry was in the hospital, essentially dying, you know, his brother basically was, his brother was saying that all Robin wanted to do was go home. She wanted to get out of the hospital. She just wanted to be home. She didn't want to be in the hospital. So, Robin got well enough to go home. She took the baby Frankie home, and basically, Jerry died on Mother's Day. One of his last words was to his mom, Happy Mother's Day. And so, the family really felt like that Robin was a part, like this was a hit on Jerry Colombo's life. So they was like, Robin's in on it. And but so many words, they say in the documentary, if they had proof that Robin did it, she wouldn't be alive today. Oh, okay. That sounds like a threat. Okay. So shortly after Jerry Colombo died, his house got robbed. And they took all of his memorabilia cards. They had slot machines. And, you know, the brother seems to think that Robin had something to do with it. Now, in every confessional that they've shown of Robin thus far, she's been in this, like, little tight little red dress. She got, like, a little waist trainer belt on. She got her red hair. And, you know, she's smoking a cigarette sitting to the side. Now, after we learned that the house got robbed, they show her in her living room and, like, you know, a little long t-shirt smoking her cigarette. And I'm like, why are they showing her in this light? And so basically, I just said it again. I'm sorry. I'm going to say I got like four more basically's. So they asked Robin, like, did you know about the house, Robin? She's like, yeah, I mean, I didn't care. I didn't care about that time. You know, I just lost my husband and I didn't care. And they're like, do you know who did it? She's like, you know, my husband had a lot of unsavory friends, so anybody could have did it. I didn't really care about that. So I just found that interesting because, So then Jerry Colombo's brother, Frank, his wife, I think her name Heather, they basically say that they didn't like Robin and they felt like, you know, after, you know, Jerry stopped, you know, providing after he died, she really kind of like went on a life of grand theft auto. She was wanted for check fraud, for cashing fraudulent checks, robbed some different things. And so basically they show this evolution of Robin living at the high life. And now, girl, she's like a gutter butt. And she has to, like, you know, steal cars. She got to write checks. Well, Robin, you got a check for me real quick? I could cash something. I got these student loans. But anyway, so we start to see Robin in this, like, different light. Then we get to meet Robin and Jerry's son, Frankie. And he is an interesting character. He's rather young, maybe in his 20s. He's kind of cute. He's got a daughter. And what we learn is that Jerry's brother, Frank, and his wife, they really wanted to get his son. And that was one thing that Frank promised Jerry. He's like, I will always look after your son. You don't need to worry about it. I got him. Child, Robin kept Frank away from them. And to this day, they have yet to meet, Frankie. And so we meet Frankie, and Frankie's like, he doesn't really know a lot about his father. Only like the videos that we get to see. Frank has a daughter now, and he says he really can appreciate being a father because he didn't realize what he missed out on until being a father, and he feels like it makes him a better father. And he was saying how he don't really mess with the rest of the Colombo family because they think his mom set his dad up, and he's like, my mom would never do that. So that's basically what we see. So what then, the FBI, they still got a case, right? And so they want to know Jerry Jacobson, Uncle Jerry. Well, who's his recruiters now that the big Jerry Colombo is out? So we meet this guy named AJ Glum. And AJ Glum, back in the 80s, you know, he used to run some cocaine. He got caught up on a cocaine bus, and he was running for Uncle Jerry for a little bit. What I mean by running is he was getting the tickets, and basically he was doing what Jerry Colombo was doing, finding people to get the tickets to and basically cutting them in on it. Now, we don't really get to see, like, whether or not if he was shaking them down like Jerry Colombo was, but, you know, AJ, what he really talks about is that, like, how he probably found 20 people for Uncle Jerry, and out of those 20 people, you know, he had 10 $10 million tickets. So at least, you know, $10 million ran through his hands. And all he think that he got was $614,000. $614,000. Am I saying that right? $614,000 out of $10 million. Whoo. And so they just really wanted to show the wide scam of how big Uncle Jerry's arms were, of how many recruiters he had. Like, we just thought it was Jerry. Now, mind you, we meet this other guy named Dwight Baker. He was like a developer in South Carolina, and he met Uncle Jerry through selling Uncle Jerry a plot. You know, he like takes us on this tour of all these plots that he used to own. And so he said that's how he met Jerry. Now, Dwight, this devoted Christian man, you know, he had an accident where I want to say like a forklift or something. He fell off. He was injured. He was on oxycodone, so he couldn't work. And so Uncle Jerry offered him a situation. He was like, listen, I can get you $1 million ticket, but, you know, I need $100,000. And Dwight was like, well, I don't really know anybody like that, but I know this one guy named George Chandler. Now, George Chandler was basically a foster son to Dwight. Okay, and you know, George been working since he was 15, dropped out of high school. He had jobs. He basically said he wanted to be a millionaire by the time he was 23, and he more so succeeded that. He had different jobs in different areas, technology, growing crops, you know, and so basically he looked to Dwight as like a father figure. So the way that Dwight roped Chandler in was George was going through a divorce at the time. So Dwight, you know, Uncle Jerry basically told Dwight what the tea was. You know, Uncle Jerry was spilling the tea about, you know, the tickets. Like, you know, $100,000 get you $1 million ticket, you get $1 million and boom, you happy. So the angle that Dwight went with his ex-foster child was he knew that his foster child, George, was going through a divorce. So Dwight was like, well, I know this friend who is separating from his wife, and he got this $1 million ticket he wanted, but he don't want the wife to get any of this money. So basically he wants to sell it so it won't go in their marital assets. Okay, so basically Dwight playing on Chandler's heartstring. So basically Chandler give him the $100,000 and wins this $1 million. And then, you know, this $50,000 every month for 20 years. And so basically we see Chandler, and Chandler says basically it didn't really do a lot of good for him because, you know, here he is, this poster boy in their country, in their state. And he's trying to run businesses. And people are like, well, why you got to work if you just won $1 million? So it wasn't really that great for him. Now, mind you, what I am wanting to know from this series is all of these people that we're talking to. You know, we're talking to AJ Glum. We're talking to Frank. We're talking to Dwight. We're talking to George. We're talking to Gloria Brown. I want to know, did any of these people have to go to jail? Like, that is what I'm really waiting for, the conclusion of McMillions, because we just see them living regular on this interview. So, now mind you, I got to tell you the story about Dwight Baker Dwight Baker got that $1 million ticket with George, and then so Uncle Jerry was like, well, I got some more. If you could find some people, I got you. So, he found this guy named Ronnie something. I don't even know. His name was Ronnie something. And Ronnie was like, well, listen, I'll take two or three of them. So, that is when Dwight basically explains to us that he kind of sort of got greedy. Now, we don't really know what happened with Ronnie, but Dwight tells the story that Uncle Jerry said to Dwight, was like, listen, McDonald's is doing like a $500,000 ticket. He's like, and where you don't have to wait 20 years to get the money, they just writing you a checkout for $500,000. So Dwight was like, well, listen, that's the check I want. Dwight was like, I want that check, and I can, you know, boom, 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 I'll get out the game. So he goes to his sister-in-law, Brenda, basically tells her, listen, we put a little money up, we can get $500,000, we can split it. Boom, done. And basically Dwight's like, I want to be out of the game. Now, mind you, y'all know the FBI got the wiretaps and they listening, okay? So remember this, because they are now figuring things out. And remember when I told y'all when McMillions started, they were getting ready to do another McMillions. And so McDonald's and the FBI were like, should we stop it or continue it? So no, they continued it so they could figure out, you know, the stream of things. And so, you know, we know the FBI is listening. So let me tell y'all, let me wet the whistle to tell y'all this story. So Dwight, get the money, pay Uncle Jerry. They get the $500,000 ticket, get sent to his sister-in-law, Brenda House. You know, he says, well, lay low for a while, Brenda. Then I hit you up. We'll cash the check, and we'll go on our merry way. Dwight ain't hear nothing from Brenda, okay? Because Brenda would have been me. I would have got your check, and y'all would have never heard from me again. boom, Purple Pants Podcast is over. You'll never hear from Bryce Isaiah again, okay? Brenda is me. So Brenda, she got the check and was out. So the white drive over to the sister-in-law house. Child, the house is cleaned out. He finds the FedEx envelope that would have been the check on the floor. So he get in the car, run back to his house and tell his wife. And he's like, Brenda took the money. Now, I don't know how he figured out that Brenda was at the airport. That's the part that's a little fuzzy to me, so forgive me. But he got the tea that Brenda was at the airport. So him and his wife start driving to the airport. Now, mind you, his wife got the cell phone. And I don't know who she calling. But she called her sister to be like, Brenda, where you at? And Brenda didn't pick up. So she put the phone down. But she didn't hang it up. Because, you know, back in the day with them flip phones. And so, mind you, the FBI is listening to this conversation. And basically, Dwight and his wife is like, girl, when we see her, we going her up. I'm going to kill her. And so now the FBI is like, oh, my God, wait a minute. If they going to really try to kill her, we're going to have to do something about this. Because we can't, like, be, you know. So now, now it's like, oh, my God, if the FBI intervenes, what's going to happen? Because it could throw the whole mission off. Meanwhile, Dwight and his wife still in that car, and his wife is going off. Like, when I see her, I'm going to put my, like, you know. So the FBI sets up agents at the airport. And mind you, they are actually showing us the footage of, like, the airport where they're, like, showing us Dwight on camera. Now, mind you, this is, like, in 2000, so, you know, the camera ain't that great. But it's so good. And so we see Dwight walk up to Brenda and put his hands on her, like, just tap her on the shoulder. And then we got to wait till next week's episode, okay? This is what I'm saying. Like, you just don't know where McMillions is going to take you. It's so good. Monday night HBO. Make sure you guys get into it. So keeping the tea rolling, we got 60 days in. You know, this is my show, A&E, Thursday nights. So, who should we start with? Let's start with the women's pod, because the men's pod, this episode was popping again. So, y'all know my girl Shanice is out. And so now it's just Ashley and Jennifer left. So, I was telling y'all last week that, you know, first of all, Ashley, a friend of the show, hey, boom. They are now, it's like they aren't suggesting that Ashley is a part of 60 Days In. They are proclaiming it. Like, her nickname is 60 Days In. They're calling her Officer McNary. So they are, you know, Ashley's concerned. So they pull Ashley out for an interview, and basically Ashley tells them, like, you know, it ain't like a question if I'm a cop. Like, they know it. But this is what I appreciate about Ashley, because if it was me, I would say pull me out right now. Ashley wanted to stay in. Ashley wanted to complete her mission. She wanted to stay in. So they're like, all right, girl, you can go back in, but we got to talk to Chief Peek to see what he say, because ultimately this is his prison, so we got to do what he say. So Ashley goes back into the women's pod. They call Chief Peek. Chief Peek is like, I can't sleep at night knowing that she'll be a danger. Well, I'm confused at how you sleep at night at all, Chief Peek, because every night there are people at danger at, you know, the Alawada County Jail, because you've got one security guard to practically 1,000 men. So I don't know how you sleep at all at night, because no, there's not a lot of safe people in their jail. But anyway, so Chief Peek, basically, they then pull Ashley out again. She meets with Chief Peek, and basically Chief Peek is like, listen, I gotta pull you out. It's a safety concern. We can't have you hurt. Ashley is so upset. You know, it hurts to see my girl upset, because she's like, literally, I have 8 days and I will be done. She's like, put me back in. I'll just go back in my cell and I'll chill. They're like, we can't have it. But kudos to Ashley, because she was probably my favorite character this episode, or not this episode, this whole season. I'm very honest with y'all. I told y'all, when I first seen Ashley on the show, I'm like, oh, I ain't gonna like her. She's too hyped to go into jail. She's too Miss Perfect. But to see the evolution of Ashley and to see the goodness in her heart really kind of like restores my faith in a lot of different things. And I'm happy to say that, you know, Ashley is a friend of my show. You know, we talk back and forth, and that's my girl. So I'm happy that, you know, Ashley was able to convey a lot of information to Chief Peek about, you know, the pat down process, the underwear, and to report that Correctional Officer Williams was terminated. So shout out to Ashley, because I know that is a huge victory for her. Now, so the only female left is Jennifer. And mind you, y'all might disagree with me, but I don't know what y'all keep saying that Shanice wasn't doing nothing. I'm trying to figure out what the heck Jennifer doing, okay? Because, you know, Jennifer is a born-again Christian. She, you know, she believes in praying, and so do I. But, you know, child, Jennifer just is on a whole different level with her whole prayers. Now, my thing is, like, I believe in God, I believe in prayer, but I just don't believe in prayer alone. Like, I feel like you got to put action behind your prayer. I'm just not going to say, I'm going to pray this way. And, like, you, like, so, child, Jennifer is doing a whole bunch of nothing, okay? We could put Shanice back in there because I felt like Shanice was at least uncovering the fact that the medical attention in jail is horrible. And that if you got a food allergy, it's horrible. I don't even know what Jennifer's doing. She ain't even really worth much more of my time, okay? Because I ain't giving it to Jennifer. Ashley going, and in my opinion, that's the last female out. But, baby, let's get into the men's pod. Whew, let me wet the whistle, baby. Listen. Oh, oh, Tony and Dennis, they still going at it. But, baby, let me just tell y'all how Tony... You know, the correctional officer from Atlanta, he ain't playing, okay? You know, he was with my boo O'Shea, okay? You know, he got a shank from O'Shea, and basically, you know, he started getting more commissary, and basically, Tony was like, I'm going to try to become, like, not the pod boss, but I'm going to try to get as much stuff as I can so I can really get as much drugs. His goal is to get as much drugs as he can to get it out of the jail. So, listen. The store day comes, and basically the store day is like their commissary, and that's what they use for money. So basically, Tony become a bank. He start lending stuff out to get more stuff back because he really wants to earn respect in the pod. So on this store day, Tony got 37 soups, 8 honey buns, 3 boxes of Nutty Bars, and 10 sodas, okay? So Tony is now about, he is servicing like 20 to 30 people. And, you know, remember the little Caucasian boy in his jail cell, Justin? Well, Justin is now his bookkeeper, okay? So they are very, 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 very popular. So Tony gives stuff out, he gets stuff back. So he really wants to, like, you know, earn his respect. Now, this one guy named Anthony was talking to Tony, basically told Tony he was hungry. And so Tony gave him 2 packs of grits. And so Tony was like, when payday come, I need for you to give me 3 soups back, okay? So, came about, you know, Commissary Tuesday came, and Anthony didn't have nothing to show for. Anthony was like, you know, my girl tripping. And so, Tony is like, I can't have somebody in the pod owing me money or owing me commissary, because then they're going to think everybody could get away with it. And if in order for Tony, in his mind, and mind you, even in one of Tony's interviews, they was like, you sure you're not losing yourself, Tony? Tony's like, no, I'm good. But child, Tony sound like a real inmate. So he's like, in order to have respect, in order for me to be able to move the amount of drugs that he wants to move, he's got to have respect. Now, mind you, we haven't seen him get any drugs. We just see him moving commissary. Child, I could open up a corner store at work, okay? I could go to the corner store and bring Slim Jims and Jolly Ranchers and auction them off at work too, Tony. But so Anthony does not pay up. So Tony goes to his door, and Tony tells him that he needs to take off his pants, his shirt, his blanket, his socks. He wants all of his stuff, or he's going to beat his, okay? And so Anthony slide all of that stuff under the door, and it's quite comical. Like, oh my God, I can't believe he's doing this. And so Tony then gives out his belongings to his friends. Like, listen, you know, I just wanted to make an example out of him, because if not, then people will owe me money and I won't have the respect. But baby, let me tell y'all, the second Anthony got out, he ran to a female CO and told her that Tony was going to stab him and requested to go to PC. PC is protected custody, which is essentially like solitary confinement. And so basically he ran Anthony out of that jet, like out of that pod. And mind you, okay, this is not funny, but when Anthony left, child, all he had on was like a little t-shirt and his underwear. Like, Tony took all of his clothes. Now here's my thing. Now, you're supposed to be in there making a difference. And I understand to make a difference, you got to, like, play a certain level. But, I mean, are you doing too much, Tony? Like, I don't know. Like, it's a little fine line. And where are the drugs at? Because you haven't got any drugs, okay? But Tony is really living their life, okay? And Justin is his bookie. Now, let's go to Dennis/Quincy. So, we know Dennis has a shank. And Dennis, for whatever reason, you know, since Tony has been in there. Dennis, from the beginning, you know, he was a showboat, you know, only really for himself. He's really kind of like turned it around. He's really kind of like, you know, he was saying that if and when the program ended today, he would not be happy with his time because he was not able to like get enough intel. So Dennis is committed to getting some drugs and trying to get some drugs. So Dennis knows this guy named Reds that he plays cards with. So he plays cards with Red. Red's a little straggly looking, you know, got red stringy hair, look like, you know, look like he homeless. So Dennis plays cards with Red, and basically he lets Red win the card game. And so he's like, you know what, Red, for winning the card game, I'm going to get you some ice. You know, ice is meth. And child Red is like, really? 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 Okay. And Tony like, just tell me who to get it from and I got you. I'm going to get it from you. And then so Red goes to this guy named Megatron, okay? Now, Megatron is on the same level as O'Shea, okay? Megatron doesn't look, he's not that easy on the eyes. He got a nice little body. He got like a little rotten tooth. But, you know, if I was in jail, I mean, I guess I would have to, you know, maybe watch Megatron transform a couple of times. But okay, but I will O'Shea, okay? But you know, but I'm just saying, like, Megatron ain't that bad looking. He, you know, all things considered for Etowah County, I mean, I would have O'Shea and Megatron fighting over me, okay? We gonna have O'Shea today and we'll have Megatron transform tomorrow. But anyway, this is why I'm so crazy. So Megatron is essentially like, oh, what you need? I can get it. I can get it. What you need? What you need? What you need? I can get it. I can get it. I can get it. So he like, what you want? Basically, he like 10 soups and 10 honey buns for some rock of ice. Now, that just seemed like a lot because we've been watching Tony do transactions and that just seems like a lot. And mind you, they don't. And another thing that Dennis said was like, while Dennis was in there, like nobody messed with him, but nobody really offered Dennis like drugs, commissary, like, you know, anything like that. Like they never really like came to him for that. So he doesn't really know the game like that. So here comes Megatron. Megatron says 10 soups, 10 honey buns. Yeah. So Dennis got it. So Dennis goes upstairs to his room. Megatron's like, tomorrow or later tonight, I got you. So Dennis goes upstairs to his room. He gets the bags. He's like walking out. And as he's walking out, Megatron is walking up and like two COs are right there. And so they open up his cell and Dennis is like, here. And they're like, oh, what's that for? What's that for? And now mind you, A&E try to make it seem all dramatic. Like, oh my God, is he about to get caught? But basically they're asking him what it's for. Dennis says it's a bet. He lost the bet. He wants to get on a bet again tomorrow. So he has to pay him. And that's it. So Megatron takes the honey buns, and mind you, Megatron's cellmate is the one that has the ice. And now Dennis was like, the crazy thing about it is he's seen Megatron's cellmate 1,000 times, never thought anything about it. And he was like, that's the crazy thing about jail is that you never know. So Megatron puts the stuff in the jail cell, and then, you know, boom, boom, boom. You know, after they shut the door, the cellie is still in, and he slides the ice underneath the jail cell, and Megatron got it. Then Megatron comes, sits down next to Dennis, and basically he just pulls it out, and Dennis is like, whoa, 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 don't pull it out in front of everybody like that. I don't want people to know I'm buying this stuff. So he's like, let's go talk to the back. Let's go talk to the back. And then they walk to the back, and then, you know, we get a confessional from Tony, like, yeah, I see that Dennis is trying to get some drugs in here as well, too, but he's like, he's not moving it how I'm going to move it. And then that's the end of this episode. So, I mean, Dennis and Tony is really up in here. But child, Tony is really the pod boss. So we've only really got a couple more episodes left. So I'm nervous. I'm excited. And yeah, so y'all come on. Y'all better tune into these last couple of episodes of 60 Days In. It comes on Thursday nights, A&E. Get with the program. Okay, I gotta go watch Megatron transform. Ooh. Life after lockup. Okay, I had to take a break. You know, just wanted to give y'all the most juice. So it's back. I got the tweets. I saw the DMs. Not 60 days. Y'all want your life after lockup updates and baby. I gotcha. But not a lot happened last week's episode, which is why I wanted to combine it with last week's and this week's episode so I can give y'all the most tea possible. So, Andrea and Lamar, you know, Andrea, Utah, Lamar from California, she's the Mormon. They went out, the last we seen them, they were on this date, but Andrea was not for it. She basically was like, you know, you're not, when you were in jail, you're a different person. Now you out. Like, I don't feel it. And if you want to get a divorce, let's get a divorce. So basically Lamar was trying to take her out. do something nice for her. But she was not with it. So we see the next day they are home. And Andrea is obviously, like, very bothered. Like, you know, she's just like, after what I found out last night, I'm over Lamar. So she calls one of her girlfriends and she's like, hey, can you come get the kids? And the girlfriend is like, sure, like, give me an hour. So, you know, they making bacon and eggs for the kids. Lamar is like, you know, something seems wrong. Andrea's like, yeah, I don't want to talk about it. The kids are like, everything okay, mom? So they're like, yeah, like, you know, she like, Miss Susie's coming to get y'all because I need to talk to Lamar. So Miss Susie comes, gets the kids, and basically Andrea goes into her room, and she's like, so is there anything that you want to tell me? Like, you know, now is the time for you to be honest. Anything you want to tell me? Lamar like, I don't know what you talk about. I don't know what you talk about. So Andrea's like, is that your only coat? He's like, yeah, that's the only coat I brought up here. She's like, get the coat, open the pockets. So he opens the pockets. He pulls out condoms. Andrea starts, what? Disrespect. I mean, Andrea is throwing these balls, okay? Andrea is like, you know, short little thing, but she is throwing these bowls. And Andrea is like, why would you disrespect me like that? And so Lamar is like, they not even mine. They not even mine. I don't even know who they are. They could be my brother. You know, my brother used my jacket, child. So immediately he calls his brother. And his brother's on speakerphone. And he's like, yo, what you had in my jacket? The brother like, I don't know what you talking about. And then Lamar's like, did you have condoms? He was like, oh yeah, I would have had the condoms in there. And Lamar's like, well, what color were they? And the brother's like, you know, yellow, first of all. So, ladies, let me just tell you this. First of all, brothers and boys will lie for each other. Okay, they will pick up on certain things. And just so I don't even believe that. I'm not believing this story. Okay, for a number of different reasons. So, basically, the brother is basically saying they're his condoms. So, after Andrea comes down, you know, Lamar is like, you know, if you still want me to leave, I'll leave. And she's just like, you could go. He's like, but, you know, they weren't mine. And he's like, you could talk to my brother. Like, my brother said that they was his. He was like, you know, she's like, but you already talked to him. He's like, but it was on speakerphone, so you could have heard it. So Andrea talks to the brother. The brother explains that they're his condoms, you know. And Andrea's like, the only reason why I'm going to believe you is because I've seen you in that coat multiple times. So I'm going to believe you. And so basically, Andrea's like, you know, I apologize. And like, you know, Lamar's like, so do you still want me to go to the airport or do you want me to stay here? Andrea's like, you could stay. So that's Lamar and Andrea. That's the update for two episodes. But here's my thing though, okay? Lamar wore that jacket from the plane from California to your house. He didn't feel in his pockets condoms and didn't think to throw them out. Okay. All right, I'ma just leave that alone. Leave it alone. If Andrea forgive them, we forgive them. We got Angela and Tony, okay? You know, Angela's been the warden. You know, she don't trust them. She's been on stakeouts with him. And basically, you know, she and Tony have been going a rough way. She tells Tony she loves him, but, you know, it's hard for her to trust Tony because Tony's past. You know, they go see Brother Joe, marriage counseling. We learn that Tony's dad was abusive to him. So it's a pattern that he is repeating to Angela. So ever since then, you know, Tony, like, I really want to make it work with Ange. So Ange goes to work in the morning and child, you know, they live in a trailer park. And so, you know, he sets up a grill, he gets a picnic table, he puts some poles in the ground, wraps some lights around it, and, you know, trying to make a little date night romantic barbecue hillbilly style, okay? Listen, I mean, I didn't have a Valentine, so I can't be mad. So, and mind you, he puts on a suit and tie. Mind you, he's sweating. He looks like the Pillsbury Doughboy. And it's just something the way Tony talks. It's like, I don't even know why. He's just like, hi, Angela. I want you to, And so Angela, mind you, so Angela pulls in, and guess what Tony's doing? Smoking a cigarette. Angela pulls into the car, and what's she doing? Smoking a cigarette. And she's like, oh, God, what are you doing, Tony? He's like, I got a surprise for you. I need you to put this blindfold on. She's like, oh, you expect me to trust you like that? But, child, she put the blindfold on. Put the blindfold on. Tony takes her to the house, and then he's like, I want you to put this dress on. She puts the dress on. He takes Angela outside. Angela sees the Pikmin table on some cardboard boxes and the grill. And she's just like, oh, my God. Oh, my God, Tony. You're such a good guy. You do love me. You do love me. So, basically, they just on cloud nine, okay, they make some steaks and potatoes. And at this table, Tony is like, I really want to marry you. And I want to marry you as soon as possible. And she's like, I want to marry you too. I can't wait. But I feel like, why you want to marry her as soon as possible? I feel like Tony want to marry her as soon as possible so that if he do something crazy and cheat on her again and she find out, she just can't kick him out because they'll be married. So that's That's Angie. Now, baby, Lacey, Shane, and John. Woo! Okay, now, you know Lacey and Shane are friends of the show, and they listen from time to time. So, this is just a disclaimer. Lacey, if you're listening, girl, I am not happy with you these last couple of episodes, okay? So, let's go in. So, Shane confesses to Lacey that right before they got married, he cheated on her, he got drunk, a one-night stand, never meant anything to her, but he wants to keep her open and honest. Lacey, since then, has been hot to trot with him and does not want to see or speak with him. So, Lacey, you know, finds out that John is out of jail, finds out that he's in this rehab program, and child, Lacey goes see John. Now, John is allegedly, like, working. You know, he worked for his dad. They do, like, HVAC and, like, you know, air conditioner type stuff. So she goes see him at a job, and Lacey's like, you know, you look so good. And John's like, yeah, I know. I know. She's like, oh, my God, I missed you. And, like, you know, I really realized that, like, when I found that you went to jail, like, how much I love you. And John's like, I know, baby. And, like, I think I might have made a mistake with, like, marrying Shane because, like, you know, Shane cheated on me. And John's like, oh, I would never. And Lacey's like, and, you know, John's never cheated on me. You know, his only problem was heroin. So Lacey is just like, child, pissing me off because, you know, we team Shane over here. And, you know, we seen that last episodes that how John was talking to his sister and basically saying, like, he wants Lacey back and loves Lacey and that, like, you know, it's only a matter of time. So, basically, John's like, well, nobody's here. And Lacey's like, really? This is, like, perfect timing. So, basically, they go in the house. They start making out. And, you know, Lacey confesses to John that she got a tattoo of Shane's name right above her cootie cat. And John's like, why would you do that? That's so stupid. So John goes out to smoke it off because, you know, he's so upset with her. And so Lacey comes out smoking a cigarette too. And basically John's like, so how long is this going to last? And Lacey's like, really not much longer. And so basically, I don't know if they are working a plan to be together? Because I'm not happy with that. So Lacey goes to see her dad. You know, her dad always with the kids. And she tells her dad that she's seen John. Dad don't like John. And she tells her dad that Shane cheated on her and she's upset with Shane. And John, which is also her dad's name, he's like, well, are you going to tell Shane that you've seen John? And she's like, I wasn't planning on it. And her dad is like, well, you know how dad has spilled the tea in the past. So you know how dad is waiting to spill the tea to Shane. So the next we see of Lacey is we see Shane at the house. He bought the kids a trampoline. He's putting the trampoline together. Lacey's dad comes over. Lacey's dad really gets along with Shane. And he's like, you know, so I heard that, you know, you stepped out on my little girl. And Shane's like, it was a mistake. It was a one-night stand. I never wanted it to happen. But, you know, I'm just trying to work on getting back together with her. And her dad is like, is she being honest with you? And Shane's like, yeah, she's being honest. You know, we just have a little rough patch. Meanwhile, Lacey upstairs in the bedroom, FaceTiming John, talk about take your shirt off. Lacey, stop playing with my Shane because we're going to have some problems, okay? So that's Lacey and Shane's little mess. Child, Cheryl and Josh. It ain't even really no update with Cheryl and Josh. Basically, they broke up. That's Cheryl and Josh because listen, the real tea is with Clint and Tracy. So listen, let me wet the whistle for this one. Oh, Clint and Tracy. So y'all know they got arrested. She had meth on her. He had a little weed. He got out. They kept Tracy. He went home, told his parents. He bonded her out. He had to pay $5,000. Okay. His mom didn't want him to. You know, he got the $5,000. He got her out for the first week that they were home. They would not let the Love After Lockup producers there. Then the producers finally came. They're sitting on the bed with 1,000 dogs. And Tracy is saying that she wants to go to rehab. Clint is saying that's the best thing for them. And this episode, child. Okay. The Love After Lockup producers, like, arrive to their house and, like, you know, they seem to kind of, like, barge in. And Clint is, like, you know, pacing up and down the hallway. We've seen this Clint before. And they're like, is Tracy here? And he's like, no, she left last night. You know, we got into a little bit of an argument, but, you know, we were hanging out. We had sex. I fell asleep and I woke up and she took the dog in the car. And I, ooh. Child, what did Clint's mom say? So, and she won't pick up the phone for him. So Clint is calling. Won't pick up. The producers are like, well, what is the argument about? Clint says the argument is about that he wants Tracy to go to rehab. And Tracy basically is saying she don't want to go to rehab. She don't want to go to rehab. She want to keep using. And that's what they fight about. And so she finally calls while the producers are there. And, you know, Clint's like, oh, it's Tracy. Hello? You know I hate you, right? And he's like, why? She's like, I don't want to do what you want me to do. You want me to be somebody I'm not. You know I hate you. First of all, hold on, wait. 10-9-8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1. First of all, whoo, you was out on $5,000 of my money, and you got my car and my dog. If you don't get your little tail back here, is what I would be saying to Tracy. So they go cut back and forth. She hangs up. 2 days later, she calls back and says that she does not want to go to the clinic, is what she says, with the clinic's like the rehab. And he's like, just come home. She's like, you just want me to come home. And so she alludes to the fact that she will come home if Clint will bring her the dope that's in the house. The dope that's in the house, huh? And so Clint is like, I didn't know there was any dope in the house. And so on the speakerphone, Tracy's like, it's in the dresser next to our bed. Like, I'll come by if you give it to me. And so Clint is acting flabbergasted. Now, mind you, we knew that, like, they was home by themselves for 2 weeks or a week before they let the cameras in. Clint, how would she get the dope if you've been by her side the whole time? We know you're the enabler. So Clint flushes the dope down the toilet. And it's just like, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. Calls his mom. And his mom is like, what? What? We told you. I don't get it. I can't find a man to text me back consistently. I can't find a Valentine's, okay? But Tracy can find this guy to marry her, spend $1,000. Clint, child. Listen, Clint, if I wasn't dealing with O'Shea and Megatron, I might give you a call. I just might. So we'll have to see, because Tracy has to go back to court in 2 weeks. And if she, first of all, is on the run, then Clint ain't getting his $5,000 back. And if she does not go to rehab, then the judge is not going to be lenient on her and going to send her to jail. And I don't think Clint gets his money back. Whew. Chalet, I can't. Now, babe, bang. The most interesting, Megan, Michael, and Sarah. And then I guess you can add Maria, because we know Michael is now dating this girl named Maria. So, tad bit about Megan. She's writing songs, singing, hasn't talked to Michael in 3 weeks. She calls Michael's mom, who she has previously not had a great relationship with. And she calls the mom, and the mom picks up like, what can I help you with? Okay, not a hello, not how you doing, what can I help you with? And she's like, I haven't heard from Michael in a while. And she's like, girl, I don't know what to tell you. I haven't heard from him either. So basically, that's Megan. I don't have nothing for her. So, but it's more interesting. Michael and Sarah, we know that Michael came to the house, the kids was crying, then they got, you know, really comfortable, you know, Sarah sent the kids with their grandma, Michael wanted to take the kids to the hotel, but once Sarah found out that he had a girlfriend there, she did not allow it, so they got into this big, nasty fight, they were screaming at each other, and Michael left. So this episode picks up with basically, every time I say basically now I laugh, with Sarah texting Michael saying that, like, I've tried everything. Maybe we can try counseling. We really need to get on the same page for the kids. And mind you, she's writing these paragraphs to Michael and he just responds, okay. So they go to therapy and Michael is a half an hour late. And the one thing that I don't like about therapy is, like, this has been Sarah's therapist since she's been 15. I feel like, you know, when you do couples therapy, I feel like you should definitely have a therapist that is, what do you say, like neutral. So I feel like she might be too pro Sarah in this. However, like, you know, they get in there. She starts asking Michael about his past. Michael starts saying that, like, you know, his mom and dad were never in his life. Not in his life, but his mom and dad never lived together as he could remember. His dad always lived in the other state, so he always kind of yearned for his dad. And so the therapist kind of draws these lines and parallels to, like, Michael's life, and basically saying, like, getting on the same page with Sarah can be the best thing. So Michael makes a statement that, like, he does not feel that Sarah allows him to see the kids or something to the effect that, like, Sarah kind of sort of flips out on. And then Michael reacts to Sarah in therapy. And so Michael gets up and basically is walking out, and Sarah reveals that she went to see a lawyer about, you know, her rights as the mother. And they actually filed a petition, went to court, and the judge granted her temporary full custody of the kids. And Michael was like, no, I never got any paperwork. How can that happen? Now, here comes my social work hat. This happens a lot of time in the social work field. And when I was doing social work at my agency, towards the end, I did this thing called family finding, where solely my job was, for the cases that we had, was for me to make contact with the biological fathers on our cases. Because a lot of the times, we'll have mothers to say that they don't know where the father is. And then we would grant court orders and not properly notify the father. And so the father could not show up to court to defend himself, because if maybe he did, then maybe the judge would have not given full custody to the mom. So that was like solely my job. So this was like, you know, I'm all like, ooh, this is so interesting, because Michael was saying that he has not been properly served. And so if he's not been properly served, then that's not fair to Michael, because now here Sarah has the court thinking that he does not care, which is why he didn't show up to court, which is why a lot of the times in family court, these judges will tend to lean with the parent side. However, in the state of Pennsylvania, they've been boosting up the laws on like family engagement and family finding, because the more we learn that there are fathers out there, there are fathers' families out there that can help support these kids. And so a lot of kids are going into placement when they don't have to. So that's a little tidbit about my job. So Michael says that he was not properly notified. So they leave the therapy session. Sarah is sitting on the ground. She's like, I'm really not your enemy. I really want to work with you, because we're connected for the rest of our lives, despite what we think of each other. And so I guess it's kind of sort of getting through to Malcolm. It ain't no Chronicle Sun this week, so we ain't talking about Malcolm Whitley. But, you know, it's getting through to Michael. And so Michael has this connection, or this confessional, where he says that me and Sarah argue a lot. We've got a very dysfunctional relationship, but no one can deny our history. And he's like, you know, no matter what, I always have something for her, even though I hate her. So in the midst of their argument, he's like, okay, I will follow your rules into being able to see the kids. And so he's like, can I come see the kids tonight? And Sarah's like, where? And he's like, I'll come to your house. And she's like, by yourself? And he's like, yeah. And so she's like, okay, I'm fine with that. So Michael arrives to the house to see the kids. They all chilling. Everybody's having a good time. Aviana, his oldest daughter, is like, I really want you to spend the night. I really want you to spend the night. And Michael's like, are you asking me to spend the night? And she's like, yeah. And Michael's like, well, I haven't woke up to my kids in such a long time, so it actually would be really nice to wake up to the kids. So Michael goes outside and calls his girlfriend Maria, who's back at the hotel. And he tells Maria that, you know, Sarah is getting ready to go out, and she's asking him to stay there and watch the kids. So he's going to be there for a couple of hours. And Maria's like, that's fine. But that's how he's like laying a trap, that he's going to say like Sarah never came home, so he just stayed there and watched the kids. But so he goes back in, he is tucking Aviana in, and then he comes out, and Sarah's like, well, I'm just going to make a drink. You want a drink? And Michael is like, yeah. And as Sarah is making the drink, she's like, I don't really care about any of the girlfriends that he has, because that's still my man. Child, girl. So this is the reason, and this is why Sarah, mind you, I be wanting to ride for Sarah, because I really want to like put myself in her predicament. But girl, you doing all of this. This is what you wanted. This is why you wanted to control the situation, is because you want Michael on your terms, so you want him to be at your house so y'all can get nasty with it. So that's how the episode ends. I don't know what happens, but I knew this is what she wanted, because girl, I thought you was over him. I thought you hated him. Child, now you trying to make him a drink and get nasty with him. Child, we don't want baby number three. But sometimes the heart wants what the heart wants. So I ain't even mad though, Sarah, but I am mad because I got a comment on this show. But that is Life After Laka, Friday nights on WeTV. All right, Purple Pants Posse. So I'm trying something new out this episode, so I love your feedback on it. So I know I've been seeing the tweets. You know I'm getting the DMs. Are you watching Love is Blind? You need to watch Love is Blind. Love is Blind. Love is Blind. Love is Blind. Y'all even had Chris Underwood texting me like, yo, bro, are you watching this? It's so good. So I really wanted to, you know, I hear, you know, we go together. So I wanted to give you guys content. But literally, my schedule, with my work schedule, with the shows that I watch, sometimes, like, to commit to something is so hard. But One of my good girlfriends, Desi, called me the other day, and I just felt like it was perfect. She was like, "Ooh, girl, you watch Love After Lock? Love After Lockup. Love is Blind. It's so good." I was like, "Really?" I was like, "Well, if it's so good, give me a review of it." And she was like, "Well, of course." So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my friend, a friend of the show, to the Purple Pants Posse, Desi Williams. She is going to break down Love is Blind for us.
Hey, booze. What's up, Purple Pants Posse? This is Desi Williams from season 35 of Survivor, Heroes, Healers, Hustlers. And I admitted to Bryce that this weekend I spent a good majority of the weekend binging Netflix's Love is Blind, and I am totally obsessed. So I really didn't know what it was about, but I was seeing a bunch of buzz on social media that some people were loving it, some were hating it, some were cringing at it. And I just didn't have a lot planned this weekend, so I decided I would get into it. So the premise of the show is they take 15 single guys and 15 single girls, and the guys live in one side of a house, the girls live in another side of the house, and in the middle of the house, they have these, what they call pods, where they can have these dates with all the other singles on the other side. The premise behind the show is that they literally do not get to see the person they're talking to until they've decided they were going to become engaged, the other person has accepted, and then, I think it's even like the next day, they finally get to see this person that they have fallen in love with. So I have to say that I started watching this show, I was already at like sort of an emotional point. I got some big news on Friday. I was already operating from a point of being like overly emotional about everything. But I came home after some cocktails and decided to watch episode one. And within the first like half hour, I was already in tears. I was crying tears of joy just looking at their love. So I have to say that I'm a hopeless romantic, but I watched the show with someone who is probably the total opposite, who thought the whole thing was a joke and ridiculous. But I am a hopeless romantic, and I do think that very much like when you're in a show like Survivor, when you take away all of the distractions, no cell phones, no worrying what you look like because the other person can't see what you look like. You don't have to worry about the influence of social media, and you just have dedicated conversations with people with nowhere to turn and nowhere to hide, that I absolutely believe that anyone could fall in love with anybody else just through talking. And so we see in episode one the most beautiful love story unfold in front of us. Everybody's favorite couple. This is where spoilers will start. So if you are planning to watch and you haven't, or you've started and haven't finished the show, you might want to cut this off. But the first love story we see unfold is Cameron and Lauren. A really kind of unlikely pair. Lauren is this tall, gorgeous, intelligent, strong, outspoken Black woman. You can tell I've got a little bit of a girl crush on her. And then Cameron is this like quirky white guy who is a scientist. He works in artificial intelligence. Like, obviously, he's too intelligent for me. A little bit stiff, a little awkward, but a hopeless romantic. And he just says all the right things. And in their second, they call them dates, the second time they meet up in the pod, they were talking about their families and they both started crying together. And that's when the waterworks started for me, and I was totally sold on the whole experiment. So you see them crying together on separate sides of the pod, not having seen each other. She's going back after every date and telling the other girls how much she likes this guy and how into him she is. And the next day, through a lot of tears on Cameron's part. He's a little soft for my liking. He gets down on one knee on one side of the pod and he proposes to her. So I'll just talk you through their love story. They see each other the next day. He's blown away by her beauty. But Lauren is very open about the fact that she's never been in an interracial relationship. Obviously, Cameron is white and he's like very white. He's from Maine. So like, I don't know how many Black people are even in Maine. But Cameron has dated Black girls before and was in a 5-year relationship with Black women. So as we see their relationship unfold, she talks a lot about being an interracial couple, but he's 1,010% in. He meets her mom. The mom falls in love. He meets the dad who she says is very into strong black couples. And by the end of the show, several episodes later, they walk down the aisle and the dad is super supportive and super happy for them. And of course, at the altar, they say, "I do." So theirs is probably the most straightforward relationship of the whole series. It really is a very sweet love story. But that's about where it ends. Everybody else's story is a little bit rockier. So we'll move next to my second favorite couple to watch, sort of cringeworthy, but Carlton and Diamond. So, side note, I kept watching Diamond just thinking like, oh, she looks so familiar. Where do I know her from? Is she a pageant girl? Like, what is it? And finally, episode 2, I have the idea that like, oh, maybe I should just go on Instagram and find her. Okay, well, it turns out that Diamond is super familiar to me because we went to college together. She's a Hampton grad. Not only did we go to college together, but she was continues to be literally best friends with my roommate junior year. So, duh, that's how I know who Diamond is. So if I had to describe Diamond, she is petite. It says her profession is like a professional dancer that can't be her only profession because they get paid like $75 a game. But whatever, that's how they're portraying her. She's a professional basketball dancer. She's got, you know, this long weave wig. I don't know what it is. It comes into play a little bit later on. But she's a smart girl. You can tell she's smart. She's confident. She knows what she wants and like she doesn't put up with a whole lot of mess. And then she falls in love with this guy named Carlton. Now, if I had to describe Carlton, I would say that he dresses like a car salesman from Detroit. And I say that because if you've ever met somebody from Detroit, a man in particular, they're really into colorful suits and they're really into colorful snakeskin or some kind of print shoe. And then they're going to wear a shirt of a completely different color. And that's basically who Carlton is. He describes himself as being extra fly and he always dates supermodels, which is hard for me to even wrap my head around because he is not that fly or fine and he can't dress. But anyway, Carlton and Diamond fall in love. And one thing I didn't mention with Cameron and Lauren, just because their love story was so straightforward, was that after they choose a person to get engaged to, they do that within the first 2 weeks of the show, they spend a few days in Mexico with their new fiancés. So as soon as they get to Mexico, Carlton starts acting really weird. He has this weird masculine energy. He's telling Diamond to call him daddy. And Diamond just, like, isn't playing that. But I have to respect Diamond because instead of just being rude to him and calling him out on it, she really does sit down to say, like, hey, you're acting funny. I know when something's not right. Like, talk to me and be open. And so at this point, Carlton finally reveals to Diamond that he is actually bisexual or sexually fluid. I'm not sure how he terms it. And this was hard to watch. I'm sure it was hard to watch for everyone. And I have to say that I think Diamond handled it well. She just, you know, anybody would be shocked to hear that news. She wasn't mean to him. She wasn't condescending. She simply just said, like, she needed time to think. So she takes the night. The next day, she tries to have another conversation with him. And in Diamond's defense, like, that's a tough pill to swallow. And she wasn't completely against the relationship. But the fact that she even had any second guesses made Carlton super defensive. He got really mean. He started yelling, crying, sobbing. And it ultimately ends with Diamond walking away and Carlton yelling back at her that her wig been slipping the whole time. That's why I said we go back to the wig thing. Her wig has been slipping the whole time and she wasn't that fly anyway. So Carlton really hit below the belt. I think it was good that they explored this story because I think it's important for us to see people with different sexual preferences. However, I wish the situation would have been handled differently on really Carlton's end because he has to realize that that's a lot for someone. And not that Diamond could not have been accepting of it, but he really didn't even give her the opportunity to ask the questions or to become comfortable. He just wanted her to hear it, accept it, and keep moving. And I think that was unfair to Diamond, personally. So that relationship quickly ended. That was the last time we saw them on the show, and they went on about their merry way. There was also a cute couple, Damien, who's this Southern guy, a little bit of a ginger, who quickly fell in love with Gianna Gigi, this Venezuelan girl, beautiful face, but admittedly a little bit young. Gigi was 25, and it becomes apparent over and over and over again how young she is. So Damien is head over heels for Gigi. He's a very sweet guy, very endearing. I mean, a lot of these men were obviously hopeless romantics to even be on this show. But we see them go back and forth. They have a good time in Mexico. They get into a fight once they're back in Atlanta. And ultimately, there's one conversation where Gigi hits below the belt and says to Damien, like, you have always said that I'm the best sex you ever had in your life, but do you realize that I don't return the compliment? Basically alluding to the fact that he is not good in bed, which I thought was rude, but a necessary conversation to have before you get married, I suppose. So we see this up and down and her being into him and not into him and these emotional fights and yelling. So ultimately, as they lead up to the wedding day, you can see really Gigi kind of going back and forth is the story that they tell. They get to the altar. She goes through this whole long story about how much she loves him. And then she ultimately says, I do. They go over, they pan over to Damien, ask him if he's ready to make Gigi his wife. And he ultimately says no. And Gigi handles it the same way. I mean, maybe the same way I would handle it, but certainly the same way any 25-year-old would handle it, which is to storm outside. She runs away. She takes off her shoes. For some reason, she decides to run down a grassy hill. We see her slip and fall and get up and have mud all over the side of her. It was a really dramatic scene. She ultimately goes back in and tries to have a conversation with Damien, only I guess she just wanted answers. Ultimately, they don't end up together. No shocker to me. She was 25. She was unsure of herself the whole time. So that's Damien and Gigi. Beautiful girl. There is some suspicion on social media that they might be trying to make it work. So we'll have to see when they have the live finale next week. But they're a cute couple that ultimately, I think, just she was too young. She just wasn't quite ready. So moving right along, we see another cute but kind of boring couple, Kelly and Kenny. Kelly is this tiny 33-year-old health coach. Kenny, I don't even know what his job is, but he's an attractive enough guy, kind of boring, doesn't really say a whole lot. But we see them fall in love quite quickly when they're in the pods. We see them have an awesome time on their honeymoon. Their families meet each other. The families love each other. Everybody's supportive of their marriage. They're telling everybody that everything's perfect. And then we get to the final episode. And Kelly admits to the other girls that, one, she and Kenny have not had sex. And two, that she is not sexually attracted to Kenny. So Kelly created this rule early on that she didn't want to be sexual with Kenny. So in my opinion, she really didn't give him a chance to become sexually attracted to him. But she admits that. She admits the fact that she normally dates taller, bigger, darker skinned guys. And so we see her wedding day. She's talking to her older sister, and you can see her older sister just like trying to talk her into marrying Kenny. I think Kelly has the issue most of us ladies have, that we're used to guys treating us badly and we're used to these hot guys that we're just head over heels with, but maybe don't reciprocate those feelings. We're used to chasing after them. And I think that's what Kelly unfortunately was still looking for. And Kenny was just a good guy who actually loved her, who was attractive, but not her typical. So she gets to the end of the aisle. Kenny's ready to say I do. And ultimately, Kelly decides that she just cannot marry him. So Kelly is still 33 and single. And I think she thinks she's cuter than she is, because I think that Kenny was a very attractive guy for her, if you know what I'm saying. But ultimately, they don't end up together after literally acting like everything was perfect the entire show episode after episode. So last but not least is the juiciest, most entertaining love I don't even know if I call it a triangle, a trapezoid, a pentagon. I don't know. There's a lot of players involved here, and a lot of love and a lot of mess and a lot of drama and a lot of tears. And on one person's part, a whole lot of wine. So let's start with Barnett. Barnett is this tall, handsome Southern guy. Very typical Southern guy. You can tell that, like, he's always been popular. He's always had his choice of girls. He was probably good in sports. He's like a bigger guy with a lot of jokes. And Barnett we see going back and forth in his pods with three different girls. Elsie, Jessica, and Amber. Now, Elsie, I will say, is like a cute Southern, very typical brunette girl. Nice enough, but nothing really stood out about her. Jessica is this tiny petite blonde. She's from Chicago. Hardworking, but 34, which she'll tell us over and over and over and over again in every single episode that she is 34 years old, in case we forgot. And then Amber, who is, I would say, a typical kind of rednecky Southern girl. You can tell she doesn't have a whole lot of manners. She's never taken a course in etiquette, probably not been to a whole lot of nice restaurants, but she's fun and she's exciting. So we see Barnett going back and forth between all three of them. Ultimately, Elsie gets knocked out and we're left with Jessica and Amber. And so here is Barnett, which we could tell very early on was a player, but Barnett is trying to win Jessica over from another guy who we'll get to in a second. So Barnett literally tells Jessica, like, I need you to choose who you want to be with. Little does Jessica know that he's also playing the same game with Amber. So we see Jessica go back and break it off with this guy, only to come back to Barnett and tell Barnett that she's, like, ready to go in 110%. And him basically break off things with her. So, like, she has a conversation with one guy, breaking it off, and then Barnett has the same conversation with her, breaking things off. So Barnett ultimately ends up proposing to Amber, who is crazy and wild, and we'll get to that in a second. And Jessica ends up with this guy named Mark. Now, Mark is the nicest guy ever. Like, they hit it off right away. They were from similar places in Chicago. They loved each other. They had great conversation. But over and over again, we hear Jessica point out the fact that Mark is 24 and she is 34 and she's got a biological clock and he's 24. And basically it's that same narrative over and over and over and over again. So even while they're in Mexico, we see Jessica take off her ring. So we think, oh, it's over for Mark and Jessica. But for some reason, she keeps the relationship going. She meets the family. She talks about him to her friends. They go through this whole long diatribe. Mark is just head over heels for Jessica. It's very clear that Jessica is not head over heels for him. They have these little couples events where you can see Jessica kind of staring over at Barnett or trying to have conversations with Barnett. And ultimately, the night before the wedding, all the girls go out. They have a joint bachelorette party. Jessica goes up to Amber to just reassure her that she doesn't want Barnett and she thinks that Barnett and Amber are perfect together. And this, I gotta give Amber props for this, because Amber was like, honey, I ain't worried about you. I got my man. Don't even worry about it. And if you do come for my man, I'll kill you. So I got to respect Amber for that, because she gonna back up her man. And then we have this weird scene where Jessica and Amber kiss in the mouth, which maybe is a thing that white people do, but, like, I don't do that with my friends. So they kiss in the mouth. They go their separate ways. We see Mark and Jessica at the altar the next day. Mark is still head over heels. And ultimately, and no shock to anyone, Jessica walks away from the aisle saying that she can't get married. She's too much of a realist. And we see Mark devastated, sobbing into the eyes of his mother, which, bless Mark's heart, if he ever thought that Jessica was going to say yes, like, he's literally the most naive person I've ever met. And he probably needs some counseling. But that's how that one ended. No shocker to the audience, but apparently a shock to Mark. And then last but not least, we've got Barnett and Amber. Again, we've seen Barnett be a player with several girls during their time in the pod. But I will say once he got out of that, he was pretty solid with Amber. He even had those conversations with Jessica, and every time he would tell Jessica, you know what? I'm happy with Amber. And in his defense, he's a good man, because if we look at Amber, she got a couple flaws. There's an episode where she admits that she's in $700 worth of makeup debt, is what she called it. She's got a credit card just for makeup, and the limit is $700, which means her credit score is clearly quite low, because that's a pretty low limit for a credit card. She admits that she's got tens of thousands of dollars of college debt for college that she never finished. She admits that she's been homeless. She's been sleeping on couches. So it just seems like she doesn't have a lot going for her. But, you know, I guess some men are into that. Some men are into saving women. And that's ultimately what happens. They walk down the aisle. Barnett acts like he's going to have cold feet. We think that maybe he might say no. But at the end of the day, they end up married. So there is, I guess, some thing about a desperate woman that a man just loves. And that's all I have to say about that. So we followed ultimately six couples through the whole series of Love is Blind. Two end up together, Cameron and Lauren, and then Barnett and Amber are the two who end up married. And this week they're going to have a live finale where we can see whether or not those couples are still together, or whether or not some of the other couples have rekindled the flame. So that is Love is Blind. I literally spent half of the night on Saturday and all day Sunday just binge watching the show. I was in my pajamas till literally 4 o'clock on Sunday. But it's such a good show. And I have to say, I'm one of those people who doesn't watch The Bachelor because I'm very skeptical of love shows happening on television. But I think the way in which they set this up, where it's not about looks and it's not about drama and it's not about a bunch of women fighting for one man or vice versa, was really smart. And to me, I think really, really worked. We hear Lauren say over and over again that she's never dated a white guy, and she never would have dated a white guy had it not been for this experiment. So I am obsessed with Love is Blind. Like, I think that dating blindly now at this point and just talking to someone seems like the most effective way to meet and fall in love with a partner. But again, I'm a romantic, I must admit. But if you haven't watched it, I encourage it. I left out a lot of details, but it is entertaining. There's a lot of drama. And yeah, that's Love is Blind. So check it out. It's on Netflix. You can watch the whole series, and the live finale is coming up this week. Thanks for chatting with me, and I'll see you guys later, Purple Pants Posse.
Yes, thank you again, Desi, for that great shout. Now, I feel like I gotta watch the show. Ooh, that was so good. Now I gotta watch the show. Now I'm gonna have to bring Desi back, and we're gonna have to go back and forth with some of these characters, because wait a minute, I just wrote down a couple of names. But thank you again, Boo. Let us know what you thought about Love After Lockup. Tweet us. Let us know what you thought of, I keep saying Love After Lockup. Love is Blind. Tweet us. Let us know what you think. I love your feedback. Thanks, guys. Now we are on to one of my favorite segments on the show. It's the Purple Pants Picks, where you pick, I say. It's the Purple Pants Picks. You know what I say. So where every week I post to my Instagram stories, drop some topics, and you guys drop some topics. And so we've been hitting some home runs with the Purple Pants Picks. So this week, and I was cracking up at this one. So mind you, I had to give a full disclaimer about this next Purple Pants Picks, because I cannot believe it is making its way to the Purple Pants podcast. So, C. Pessy 82 writes, Cookie Tookie Show. Are you watching it, and what are your thoughts? So, oh my God. How do I explain Cookie Tookie? So, I don't even know. So, in Philadelphia, we have this transgender woman named Samantha James, and she also goes by Cookie Tookie. And I am completely obsessed with Samantha James. I have, like, personal stories with Samantha James, but more about Samantha James is she is a internet, as she calls herself, sensation. She goes by Cookie Tookie. She is a bit messy. She is a bit of a alcohol abuser. She does have her issues with drugs. She sometimes sells her body. And, you know, she just is a whole mess. She goes to jail a lot of the times, and she comes home. But the one thing that I like about Samantha is that she is very real in the sense of she records everything on to Instagram Live or Facebook. Back in the day, I've been following Samantha literally since like 2011, when she would like load these videos of her and like her daily, like, you know, life of what she's doing, and then posted to Facebook. And I was like so obsessed with this. And it's weird because back when I was in college, I had a cousin that dated a close friend of Samantha. And so, you know, back in college, I was like my freshman year. And I was like, you know, I drove. And so my one friend, like, who was dating one of, like, Samantha's friends, it's, like, weird, like, a male friend of hers, she moved to, like, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And so my friend was like, can you help my friend move? And I knew nothing about Samantha. And so I was like, sure. So we drove up to Bethlehem, and little did, like, you know, the friend was staying with Samantha. And so, mind you, this is, like, the first time I, like, ever met Samantha. And I was like, she just had this larger-than-life personality. And it was just, the whole day with her was just so funny. So that's like my little tad bit with Samantha. So then, you know, maybe like 6 years later, when I see these videos popping up of her online, and a lot of her videos are a mess. And like, you know, she has an alcohol problem. And a lot of times when she gets drunk, she says very vulgar things, and she's just a mess. But I don't know why. I just can't stop watching her. And then there is this this lady named T.S. Madison, who Cookie Tookie, her and T.S. Madison have a beef. T.S. Madison has, you know, the Queen Supreme Court show, and, you know, Cookie Tookie has now started a new show called Live in the 215, and it's, you know, similar format, but, you know, we're on the week three, and I've watched every episode. You know, I watch them when I'm at work, and CPESI82, I'm rooting for Samantha. I really do want the best of Samantha. I think that she is a true entertainer. I really wish that she would get her demons together, as we all have our own demons, but I really do think that she really could be an interesting star. She's so captivating. And anytime I'm at work and I see one of her live videos pop up, you know, child, you know. And yeah, anytime she calls herself a millionaire, we know that she's like really, really drunk and about to cuss somebody out. But really good entertainment. I always be telling a lot of my friends, like, y'all need to get into Cookie Tookie. Yes. Okay. I was not expecting that to be a purple pants pick. Then I have the Drenny writes, wearing jeans to go tubing. I'm from Canada, so maybe it's a lot colder here. So first of all, Drenny, is that shade? So earlier this week, my friend Sarah, she surprised me with a birthday gift. I always am talking about like how I love to do outdoor things, and none of my friends ever want to do any outdoor things with me because they're so rigid. So Sarah found this thing on Groupon called Sip and Slip, and it was at the Blue Mountain Resorts, and kind of sort of like not the Poconos, but the Pocono area in Pennsylvania. And basically, we went tubing, like, you know, you could drink some wine and go tubing, but Sarah would not tell me what we were doing, so she was just like, dress warm. So I just had on some jeans and some boots and a hoodie. I'm like, you know, and then when we got there, I'm like, girl, now mind you, Sarah knew we were going tubing, and this girl is wearing Uggs and destroyed jeans with her knees out. I'm like, girl, you look crazy. But we actually had a really good time. And let me tell y'all, so we get up there, and the young man who I first had, who got me, he has some dreads, like, you know, a little Caucasian boy with dreads. And he's like, you know, do you want me to spin you? I'm like, oh, I don't know. I just met you. So no spinning. So I didn't go spinning. But baby, when we was going down them hills, we were going down them hills. So then after, you know, me and Sarah had a couple more cocktails, we feeling a little more dangerous. We get up to the top of the hill, and this one young man is like, you want me to spin you? I'm like, yes, let me spin me. First of all, the way that boy spun me. I mean, all I'm saying was Sip and Slide was super fun. Thank you again, Sarah, for that special birthday surprise. I appreciate it. But that's why I wore jeans, because I didn't know we were going. All right, next purple pants pick. We got a good one from The Jimmy G on Instagram. He writes, getting along with those with opposite political views. Election season is a mess. Now, this is a good one. And I am really, 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 really trying to stay up to date on my politics. I try to keep my personal views to myself, only because I just feel like in this climate, that we are in, it is very divisive. And I feel that, like, you know, it comes from the top down. And I feel like the top wants us to be divisive. And I feel like, first of all, your political views are your political views. If that's who you choose to stand for, that's who you choose to stand for. However, what I would suggest, Jimmy G, is continuing to be yourself. It is a lot of things going on. And, you know, just because a person is a part of one party, it doesn't mean they believe for all of the things that the party stands for. And I truly am a believer of, you know, we don't have to agree with each other's political views, but we can still have some common understanding and respect, you know. And so I just feel like in this climate, it's just so negative. However, what I will say is that there are some people that you just have to completely disassociate with, because they cling on to the negative things of different parties. And like, yeah, I can't be a part of that. But if you are giving me knowledge and information, I can respect that. That's the only thing that I can respect. I have to respect your opinion, because none of us are the same. And so I just feel that if we can more so focus on the commonality, or, you know, what we have that are similar as opposed to what we have that are not apart, then the world could be a much better place. So I feel you, Jimmy G. Child. There's some people at my job that their political views do not align with mine. Okay. And I stay away because the stuff that I hear from them is just pure ignorance. And sometimes you just can't argue with ignorance, because it's like, because listen, if you lay down in the mud, they ain't going to know who the dummy is, because y'all both going to be in the mud. So child, I choose to rise above it. However, I don't ever not try to get to know someone because of their political affiliations. I try to be respectful, because I also understand that there are some people that, you know, my lifestyle, they're like, oh, I can't. But, you know, if they choose to get to know me and accept me, then that's all that I can ask for. So as long as they're respectful, Jimmy G, okay, as long as they're keeping it cute, you can keep it cute too. But, you know, stand true to what you believe in. I think it's important as well too. So we've got Jonathan Rose 10. Hey, baby boy. He writes, have you ever been to a nude beach? And I, ooh. So actually I have, Jonathan. Maybe back in the day when I was in college, I used to go to Miami Gay Black Pride. They have this event called Sizzle. And baby, chile. Ooh. When I tell you some Miami stories, let me just tell y'all. Going to the club one night, and child, I was, I don't know, second year college, had to discover tequila shots, you know, lick the salt, take a shot, and bite the lime. Okay, me and my one cousin, baby, we done damn near finished a whole bottle of Patron. Baby boy was loose as a goose. We are waiting in line, and I'm tired. I go to throw up in a bush and take a nap in a bush. And the story is told to me that my friends are like, we looked for you for 2 hours and we could not find you. We were so concerned, but child, the party had to go on. Then they say the next thing they know is I'm on the dance floor, throw up on my shirt, shaking a tail feather. They like, where? So child, my itch. Listen, I didn't have some Miami nights, but one of the times that we were down there, we looked up like a review for like a quiet little beach. We just wanted to lay out, have a good time. Child, we pull up. It's a new beach. Okay. I mean, we didn't go. We stayed and enjoyed ourselves, but I didn't get new because, you know, I wasn't getting into all of that, baby boy. But yes, I guess you could say I have been to a nude beach. J Troom writes, Gabriel Fernandez. Now, I done seen everybody talking about this documentary, and I already know it's going to break my heart. So I have not yet watched it, but I have put it on my list. So, you know, when baby boy puts it on his list, I try to get it together. Then we have, who we got? We've got David Joseph writes, the Hot Pocket heiress going to jail. Now, I didn't know what that was at first, because I'm like, the Hot Pocket heiress? But when I did my little research, so you already know, with Felicity Huffman and Lori Becky, child, the heiress, Michelle Chavez, the heiress to the Hot Pocket microwavable snacks, she got sentenced to 5 months in jail for her part in the college scandal, the college admission scandal. I didn't even know. Child, had the Hot Pockets in there too. Child, well, hopefully Tony in there, he might be able to work a deal out with her with two soups for four hot pockets. So, I mean, she got sentenced. So, what else can I say? She in there. And mind you, I was looking up. I don't think Aunt Becky got sentenced yet. So, I have to do some more investigation on Aunt Becky and get back to you. Then we've got Brian Droom writes International Delight Creamer, Coffee Creamer's horoscope. So, yes. So, International, y'all know I love me some International Delight. So they posted up like each creamer with people's horoscopes. And so I was like, ooh, crossing my fingers. Like Pisces, the month of February, Pisces better be with Southern Pecan. So I go to look and it definitely wasn't. But it definitely was with the Funchetti. So it's a win-win situation for me. Yes, I still love my Southern Pecan. I still love my International Delights. Maybe one day they will recognize baby boy. But until then, you know, I just got to wait. But that's going to conclude this week's Purple Pants Picks. I greatly appreciate it. You know, Friday or Saturday, I will post it to the Purple Pants Podcast Instagram or my Instagram at Bryce Isaiah. I'll write, drop some topics, Purple Pants Picks, and you guys pick the topic and I will discuss on this show. I still cannot believe that Cookie Tookie came up. Y'all don't know. This is going to be so funny to my friends that listen because I'm obsessed with Samantha James. Live at the 215. Isha LaCandela, 123. Get up off them. Ooh. All right, in this week's Advice with Bryce, I got a good email. So it writes, "Hi, Bryce. For the last 4 years, I have struggled with epilepsy. After years of misdiagnosis, I was finally diagnosed with epilepsy in December of 2019. Since then, I've been trying out a variety of medications, and my seizures are definitely getting less intense, but they sometimes still happen. I feel so hopeless at times. Additionally, I can't drive, so my family helps me out. However, I feel like I've lost a lot of my independence. Any advice?" So, well, first of all, thank you for writing in. And it's so interesting. So I worked with a coworker whose son was diagnosed with epilepsy, and it was such a struggle for him as well. And I remember, you know, my coworker would talk to me about, like, you know, different medications that they would find. And, like, you know, she would be so happy that he went like 102 days without seizures. And then, like, you know, he would have a seizure. Well, I want to commend you for being so open and honest. I feel like you sharing this to our platform, because, you know, we go together, I feel like can help someone. One, I feel like, you know, you have to figure out what medication works for you. And I feel like you trying the different medications is great. I also want to say that I know a lot of people frown upon this, but, you know, I'm not sure what state you're in, but a lot of the times I've seen a lot of different studies that show, like, you know, medical marijuana, like, helps people with epilepsy so much. And not, you don't have to, like, smoke marijuana. You can, like, take it in, like, the liquid form, or you could take a pill. And so that is, I always was, like, so interested in that as well, too. And I think it becomes acceptance. And, like, you know, you living with this condition, it's a part of you. And I think the more that you accept that this is my new normal, I feel like the more that you will be more at ease. I feel like a lot of the times, like, when things happen to us, we're always so in shock and disbelief, and we're like, what our life used to be like. And we spend so much time focusing on that I feel like we forget that we are currently living life right now. And so I think that you have to get a hold of, this is my new normal. And, you know, I may have seizures. And I think that it's important for you to keep a core circle of people around you that know what to do in the event of seizures. Because I feel like that is just important. And so I feel like the more that you can be a trailblazer in this field, in this situation, the more that you can help people and the more that you could be a blessing to other people. Because obviously, not something that you asked, it's something that kind of happened to you. And it's like, you can either choose. What did I say in the beginning of the podcast? When one door closes, we can stand outside that door and continue to knock on the door, or we can create our own way in. And I feel like you being able to open a different medications, trying new things, I think can do a world of difference. With the loss of your independence, I know that that can sometimes be a downer, because you feel like you are being helpless. However, at the end of the day, if your family did not want to be there or support you, then they wouldn't. So I think that's important for you to remember, that they're doing this because they love you. And if the shoe were on the other foot, you would do it for them. So I think that that's important for you to remember. As a sense of you losing your independence, that has to be a hard struggle. However, you can look at it as you losing your independence, or you could choose to look at it like, I got a lifetime of being chauffeured by my family and friends, okay? So listen, you can be just a fab lady all the time. And so I know that the more days that you go without seizures, that you could possibly be able to get your driver's license back. And so I think that that's a positive goal that you should look for working with your doctors and the medication. So I don't think that you should look at it as losing my independence, but I think that you should look at it as keeping myself safe. And again, we can choose to focus on the negative things, that all of the things that we can't do, all of the things that, you know, but, or we can choose to look at, oh my God, I finally got diagnosed correctly. I'm on medication that is working. I've got family and friends that actually support me. And I think that if and when we choose to focus on the positive things, more positive things come to us. And so I am wishing you all of the best. But I understand that it is easier said than done. And so I definitely can sympathize with you. However, I'm a glass half full type of bitch. And I am looking at all of the blessings that you've actually wrote in this email. And I think that it's amazing. And they actually have like epilepsy walks here every, I believe it's May. And so it's so interesting that you wrote this, because I participate in the epilepsy walk every year for the last 4 years to raise money for a cure. So I definitely always encourage support groups, finding people that are like you online, the people that you have more in common that you can bond with, creating a new network of friends. I really feel like could do you a world of difference. But thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And I wish you all of the best, because listen, our glasses half full, and I already know you got this, boo. All right, now moving right along to the freak of the week. Now, you know how I just be minding my business. I just, you know, be scrolling the Instagram. I be on the Twitter machine, and sometimes I be on the Facebook. But, you know, last week, you know, I was getting up early, just minding my business, and early in the morning, one day, somebody posted this post, says, are you ready for the week? Are you? And I said, ooh, chile, look at this body. And I looked and I said, oh my God, it is Josh Canfield. Whoo, from Blood Versus Water, baby. I don't know what Josh been doing, but Josh been in that gym, okay? Looking like a snizzack. So yes, Josh is definitely the freak of the week, okay? His Instagram is It's Josh Canfield, C-A-N-F-I-E-L-D. Y'all know what to do. Go find that photo and let baby boy know he is definitely the freak of the week. Josh, I need some workout tips. I'm trying to lose this post baby fat, trying to get in the gym. Whew, it's a lot. But that's going to conclude this week's episode of the Purple Pants Podcast. I thank you forever for listening. But don't forget to subscribe. If you could rate, write a review, show your baby boy some love, I'd appreciate it. And I will find you guys next week, because you already know
it's the Purple Pants. It's the Purple Pants. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You better get your headphones and listen up quick. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You better listen in public, might make your stomach hurt. Ooh. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to unwind, you better get that box wine. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to get your snack, you better hurry right back though. It's the Purple Pants. It's the Purple Pants.